Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Steve Hilger.
And I'm Matt Crozier. And it's my great pleasure to catch up with the man, the myth, the legend again, Steve Hildrew, after he's run biggest tournament in the world for the second year in a row. Biggest tournament in the world by a long, long way. I was just watching before we came on his little rundown video on Death by Dragons. So this was Clash of Kings UK 2024. So jump onto Steve's channel and have a look at that if you haven't, because I tell you what the video makes it look like, Steve. It makes it look like it was an incredibly calm event. Is that false advertising or was it calm?
I mean, depends for who, right? Yeah. Like yes. For me, no. I think for the players, it was pretty good. I mean, I've had a lot of feedback. We do send out like a feedback survey. I haven't done it yet, but we've had a lot of feedback that people said, you know, they had a fantastic time. It was really, you know, very cool. It was a really cool venue. It was very open, lots of space. Yeah, so I think by and large, it actually ran incredibly smoothly, given nothing's been run of that scale before within Kings of War. And, you know, we had a variety of enjoyable hitches, but only a couple of them kind of impacted the player population, and they were very, very good about it. So, yeah, no, I think it was a relatively relaxed experience. Everyone seems to have liked it, so it seems to have gone quite well.
That's awesome. So, I mean, like I mentioned in the intro, is that this is your second time round. What after last year, which ended up about how many? Was it about 150 in the end?
Last year was 156, I think.
Yep. What did you finish kind of knowing or really wanting to do better this time round?
Last year went really, really well. We were really happy with last year. It blew our expectations out of the water. They ran out of real ale at the bar. That was the biggest problem with last year's tournament. So last year's tournament was in the Nottingham Trent University Student Union, which is an awesome venue because it has a sports hall next door to it. And but they're a students' union, right? So they were really cool. It's a really awesome venue, but they're used to serving students. And so they quickly ran out of, you know, and we are a population of, let's say, slightly older bearded men who enjoy real ale. And they ran out of that pretty early on.
Plenty of room for storage of ale.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they were like, we've got loads of Alco Pops. And it was like that. No. So there was that. Apart from that, I mean, last year we had some scoring hiccups. And I'd like to say we fixed those this year. We didn't. We just created new scoring hiccups. So last year was underground, so we had no phone signal. So everyone had to do manual, like filling in pieces of paper, which for 150-odd players is not great. This year we were in a far more light, airy venue with Wi-Fi. And so people didn't have to fill in results. We used the Mantic Companion online. And there was, you know, there were a variety of issues with that, largely to do with server capacity. And that's a lesson learned. And some of it's to do with scenario setup and stuff. And it's not really important kind of what happened. The problem was it impacted us time-wise. So that was the main problem for me. I like things to run. I'm like a depressingly on-time person. I didn't used to be, but I've become, as I get older, a depressingly on-time person. So when things aren't running to time, I get quite stressed. So that was kind of the main thing in the new one. So we didn't fix that from the last venue. I mean, so other things that were better this year were because the venue we found was cheaper, we fed people, so we gave them lunch, and they could buy an optional evening meal, and the food was amazing. So this is the place we run it in now. So the student union, basically, we wanted to rerun it at the student union. They cancelled us, but halfway through the year because they shifted their term dates. So we were running the tournament in Freshers Week, which is hilarious. So on the Friday before the tournament, everyone gathers in the local Wetherspoons because it's very nearby and it's quite nice and it's quite cheap. And normally it's just a bunch of bearded guys kind of sitting around kind of laughing about elves. And this time it was a bunch of bearded guys hanging around laughing about elves and 4,000 freshers. And, you know, these populations are not destined to mix, let me tell you. There was fear on both sides, it's fair to say. So that was pretty funny. So it was Freshers Week. So we luckily we found this school. So I was touring there. I was like for 2 weeks in the middle of the year, frantically, desperately searching for a venue. And we hit upon, it's either like sports halls or schools is pretty much what the only venues you can afford. Everything else is a wedding venue in the UK. And is just, we're priced out. We can't do it. And so I was in a school in North Nottingham, about 20 minutes drive outside of town. And it was great, actually. They couldn't run a bar for us, but the space was fantastic. And I was talking to the sound guy there, and he was like, Have you tried Nottingham High School? And I'd been to the girls' school, and they said they didn't want us. They didn't feel comfortable with it. And I was like, no, they didn't want us at the girls' school. And he was like, no, not the girls' school, the high school. And I'm not from Nottingham. So I was like, the what? So I looked it up, and I rang them up, and I happened to get hold of the events lady. And I was like, it's 4:30. I realized that. But I'm in Nottingham now. Can I come and see it? She let me in. And the venue's amazing. It's like Hogwarts, right? It's like a Victorian or earlier school. It's huge. It's loads of space. It's really well priced. And I remember I rang up Ronnie and I was like, Ronnie, I found a venue. It's Nottingham High School. And he went, oh, yeah, my kids go there.
That is so Ronnie, isn't it?
I didn't think of that. And I was like, you know, sword clang. It was great. I've told that story many times. He won't mind. So that was pretty funny. So it turns out all three of Ronnie's children went to Nottingham High School. It's a very posh high school. It has like a climbing wall and a shooting range and a swimming pool.
On the videos, it looks incredible. I was going to say, you know, oh, we haven't heard of Nottingham High School. Oh, what do you mean? That castle in the middle of Nottingham, you know?
It's a bit and, like that.
Yeah. And like you said, incredibly light. Like, so I jumped on at one stage to have a look a bit of the stream, and I said to John, who was commentating, I made a comment. I was like, mate, you've got your sunnies on, but what about your hat? I'm worried about you outside. Your bald scone's going to get burnt off. And he said, actually, we're inside. You know, it was that bright. They could have been outdoors. It looks amazing.
It's nice. So the main set of tables are in what's the dining room of the school, right? Which is it's a courtyard that they put glass over the top of, right? And then they built multiple levels in. So it's a courtyard in the school. So it's huge. And then the second part of it, where the top tables were this year, is it's called the Player Hall, which is like a concert venue with a stage at the end. So the streaming table is on a stage. Yeah. And it's cool. They've got, you know, they've got audio visual systems. They've got like AV. They've got projector screens everywhere. So it's a very nice venue. And the catering's really good. Really good. And the catering staff was so, you know, some places when you hire catering and you ask everyone for their dietary requirements and this person's a vegan, this person can't eat nuts or whatever, right? And of course, nobody reads the emails you send them. And so there's a bunch of people that came in and went, oh, I need gluten-free, or I'm a vegetarian, or whatever. And the catering staff went, oh, no worries, I'll knock you something up now. And they literally would just go and make them a little bespoke hot meal. Just
wow.
How cool is that? It's just such a, like the school mentality is very, very nice. So we loved them. We're very, very happy with the venue. So cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And is that a typical thing in the UK that all the schools are looking for another revenue stream by doing things like hiring out to events, or was it completely out of the blue for them to have to help with something like that?
Oh no. So they have, so the person we were in contact with is literally, her job is to rent the venue out, right? So they do weddings, they do dinners, they do all sorts of stuff there because it's a really nice venue. And they have it's a school. They have a license to serve alcohol. The most disappointing thing for everyone was that the bar doesn't open till 11:30 because that's when their license start. And everyone's like, oh, 11:30 a.m. And I'm like, all right, alcoholics, let's calm down. As it, anyway, we've got John Fawkes on the stream, absolutely sozzled by 3 p.m. So I think it was fairly okay. So 11:30. And they kept it open until we left. We left, you know, gone. Well, they closed the bar at 9:30, actually. And then there's a bunch of foreign players there. I can't remember where were they from. Geez. We had 61 players from abroad. Anyway, there's a bunch of them hanging around while I was playing George Kirk afterwards. And they're like, the bar is closed, Steve. So we got out the Ronnie rum that I bought earlier in the day and drank that instead. A little bit reluctantly. I got to say, this ain't cheap, buddy. So yeah,
If people want to get a concept of the size of the venue, I think on that video you've done, there's, like you said, I think did you say 37 tables in that top hall where the top tables were?
Yeah.
And just look at the space around the tables. Like there's plenty of space. It looks really comfortable. And so with things like the collapsible tables and everything, did they provide those or you had to ship all that in?
So there's another good thing about this. So there's two things about putting on big events like this is that if you put them in sports halls, you have to pay for a flooring, right? And so the old venue, we had to pay for a flooring. It cost me $2,000 last year. This year, because it's in a dining hall and a concert hall, we didn't have to pay for flooring. That's one thing. The second is it's a school and it's a dining hall. It has lots of tables. So it already had like 100 tables, which reduced my cost because essentially the school tables became all of my end tables. So one of the big things about Clash that we want it to be a premium event. We want it to be the best event in the world as well as the biggest. Is that everyone wants a side table. I don't, you know, when you do tournaments, it's always, if you put your army under the table, there's people right next to you, it's quite cramped. Whereas a side table is a lovely luxury that normally you don't necessarily get. So all the school tables became side tables, and then we hired in is it 400? How many tables do we had? 100? So 200 6x2s to be the actual gaming tables. And so then we set those up as the folding tables were the ones that we bought in. Yeah.
And given this, so, I mean, obviously a couple of years ago now, you know, Mantic, like it's still a primarily Mantic tournament, right? But it's like Mantic branded, but it's essentially not Mantic. You know, it's a third party tournament, you know, basically yours now. Yeah, forever. Good luck, mate. It's hard. It's hard to retire from running these things. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I know. You know.
Yeah, I've got to remember where I was going with this question. How much? So, if it was only on ticket sales, would you be able to do anything, or does Mantic have to prop it up a bit? But given all the
No. It consumes it. So it's a community run event now. Mm. So Mantic is our main sponsor. Mm. What Mantic provides. They provide two tables of terrain, or as it turns out, one table of terrain because they lost one. they provide an enormous amount for the goodie bags. So we give people a really quite weighty goodie bag as we go in. Everyone had one of the new Mantic sample packs, which is really nice. So it's like a properly boxed up pack with a sprue and a rule book in it. Mm-hmm. They also provide us... so we have an option if you go to big American tournaments, you can buy an XL bag. Mm. Adepticon is a massive thing because you pay like $100 and you get this huge bag full of, you know, whole games from GW and stuff. So we wanted to kind of mirror that concept. So people can, they pay £30, you know, which is like $60 Australian, and they get last year it was a Titan. This year they could choose a Titan or like a selection of terrain crate stuff. And they get, so last year was a T-shirt. This year they got a hat. They get 10 Clash dice. And this year we gave them, last year it was a Mantic Prince. And this year we have this, I'll show you actually, look at one here, like a map of Panathor.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Which is really like an A2 map of Panathor, mm-hmm. which is really cool. Mm-hmm. For £30. So it's like bargain of the century, right? It's like a no-brainer if you want that stuff. So Mantic provide us their part of that, the Titan part of that and the map at a ludicrously reasonable price, you know, basically cost price. So that's their sponsorship. Everything else, the tournament consumes its own smoke. So we budget quite carefully to ensure we can afford it and everything we do for the tournament. The only thing we don't pay for, the TOs don't get anything, it's all volunteers. The terrain is provided by volunteers. But everything that we have to pay for, so everything that goes in the goodie bags, all the tables, the venue hire, the meals, is all paid for through the ticket price. And it's not a cheap tournament. People paid £60 per ticket this year. But it's 2 days and you get a lot. You turn up, basically we calculated the goodie bag itself, the normal goodie bag that you get. If you were to buy that stuff retail, it comes to pretty much your ticket price. So,
Yeah. Yeah, wow. That's amazing. And so I know that, you know, the heaviest burden falls on the main TO, obviously, because, I mean, often when you're organising stuff, right, it's just easiest to get it done yourself sometimes rather than delegate. But, you know, how big's the team getting now of having to handle this? I mean, if you don't include, say, people who are just donating terrain or something, like for the actual running of the event and the organisation.
Sure. So there's only... We have Nick Williams and we have the Smith brothers. So there's three Smith brothers that play Kings of War, and they mm-hmm. they do a big tournament down south called Warfare. And I used the, you know, I begged them and they very kindly donated their terrain. So they're the like non-TO terrain providers. Mm-hmm. All the rest of the terrain is provided by the TO. So we have a team of, I'm just going to count them now. So we've got Jan and Bob, and then you've got me, and you've got Cybrand, Matt Gorham, and John Fawkes. So that's kind of the main committee that run the tournament. We also had Chris Walsh, famous Chris Walsh of the best painting in the world, who didn't get a ticket in the first round. And even when a ticket became available, went, do you know what? No, I'll just come and be a TO instead, which was great because it means that other people could win hobby awards for a change.
Yeah.
But he was freaking awesome. He spent most of the time lounging on this kind of throne on the stage, very kind of like an emperor. And I went up to him at one point, he's kind of turned to me and went, play for me, play for me. So that's the team, and you know, that's part of the committee. And you know, we have a group on Facebook which we basically talk through the whole year. And while I do, because it's mainly because I'm a control freak and I don't trust anyone, I do most of it in terms of the procuring and the ordering and the tickets and stuff. It's very much a committee-led process. So I don't make, I for reasons of self-defense rather than anything, I don't make any decisions. I will put a decision to the committee and I will follow the decision that they make. Generally, we all agree because we're all friends and we design it that way. But in general, it's very much a committee-led process. And on various, people lead on various things, and certainly on the day, people, it's a massive group effort because you can't do it on your own. And you can't, with the best will in the world, you can run a tournament of 30 players on your own. You can't run a tournament of over 100 on your own. It's completely infeasible. You know, and Elliot Barrett turns up and runs the companion bit for me because A, I don't understand numbers, I'm not very good with them. And B, he designed it and it often needs recoding on the fly because it's still beta, right? So he's there. And then Tobias comes. It was Martin last year to run, they call it a shop. It's him taking orders and running back to Manic and picking up. I said to Ronnie, look at the man. There's a big queue where he's sitting there writing things in the building. I'm like, give us a shop, a proper shop. And he's like, it's not my decision. It's Tobias. Tobias, next year, let's shop. And Tobias is like, and I'm like that, with more than one staff. He's like, and so we have a proper shop. And my reasoning for this is that, you know, this is the biggest tournament in the world. A lot of eyes are on it. It's very cool to have a shop that looks like a Mantic shop, right? But if it's Mantic sponsored, it should be.
It frankly seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it?
Yeah. It doesn't, and they make, you know, last year, Ronnie said to me before the event, I've got to stop doing the voice. He's going to hear it at some point. He's like, no one buys things at tournaments. No one buys things. And then last year, there was a point when he was behind the shop with Clive, who was there, and there was a guy, a Spanish guy, who was literally handing him fistfuls of banknotes, right? Because he was paying with cash. And I went past, don't forget, Ronnie, no one buys things at tournaments. Yeah. And he was like,
No one buys things at tournaments. That's why there's like whole convention halls set up to sell stuff when people are gaming around them. Nice one, Ronald.
Yeah, so I think plus we give people, like, we have a very hefty discount at the tournament and people get a voucher if they bring a Mantic Army. And a lot of people bring a Mantic Army, so they have a £10 voucher. So people do definitely buy things at Clash. Mm. They really buy things at Clash. They absolutely go in because people just wait. They save it up. They're like, right, I've made my army for Clash, my Mantic army, and I'm going to buy next year's army at Clash because I get like a 30% discount or whatever. So and a £10 off. So why would I not?
Well, and when you got so many people, like I realize that, you know, not everyone has the cash to burn, but when you've got 200 people coming to a tournament, a certain percentage of those are probably going to be reasonably affluent, right? So once they're paying for a ticket that is a, you know, like you said, the the £60 or whatever. You know, they're going to be happy to hand over some cash and buy on the spot. Why would you want to wait for it to be delivered?
I think you're right. And I think, if it's your only hobby, like wargaming is my only hobby, right? So it's what I spend money on. It's what I choose to spend money on. So actually that you kind of save up. And actually, if you're going to buy an army for a year, you might as well buy it at a colossal discount, right? And people were walking off, you know, with games of Worms and games of Halo. And people had a lot of fun playing on demo pods of Worms. And they wanted to buy it. They wanted to buy it there and then. And they had them there and then. So why not, right? So it's just an opportunity. So I think, so that's really cool. What were we talking about? I kind of feel we've got lost a bit, haven't we?
Who would have thought we would get lost in the conversation?
It was committee people helping. So, yeah, so the committee, so we have like five TOs. So on the day, so Cy Brand was playing this year. I was lucky enough to get Matt Gorham, who's Matt G on Facebook, to TO this year, largely because earlier in the year he was kind of a bit disenchanted with Kings of War, more interested in bolt action. So I was like, but we use your train. You can come and TO. He's like, yeah. And by the time Clash came around, he was kind of a bit more back into Clash, back into Kings of War. So he kind of looked at it like, ah, I wish I could play. And I'm like, you can be the spare player with Bob. It's all right. So he did get a game in as spare player. So we had me, Jan, Bob, who are always just like so reliable, just turn up, drink insane amounts, and then the TO for me. John Fawkes does the stream. A basic excuse for him to sit and drink mead all bloody weekend, isn't it? And wang on with Mike Atkins on the stream. Anyway, Chris Walsh, who helps out, and Matt and me. So yeah, that was the main TO contingent, which worked pretty well. You know, we managed to. I bought walkie talkies. No one listened to them. There's nothing more frustrating than having walkie talkies, and you're like, "This is Steve. Can someone pick up?" And no one picks up, and you walk in, and he's on the stage having a long conversation with Alessio Calvatore. And you're like, why do we have walkie-talkies? I lost 2 kilograms running around this bloody tournament. Anyway, hey, that was cool. Alessio Calvatore turned up.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know what he looks like.
He looks like an Italian man, which is, see, he turned up in a full suit. I think he'd come from some kind of function because Ronnie was like, he can't stay long. He's at a family function. And he was in full, like, in a suit and a waistcoat.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's really amazing, actually, because imagine turning up to a game that you wrote on one sheet of paper and there's 200 players playing it in a hall.
Yeah,
fucking crazy, right? And then people were like...
And now he gets to walk around going, hi, Alessio. You know, wrote Kings, going to write Fourth, shake hands, move on.
Have you heard of Bolt Action?
Exactly.
It was funny because people, as they clocked him, people were kind of like, a bit like a celebrity because he is a celebrity in our world, 100%. Right? Just like, can we get a picture? Can you take a picture with my son? That kind of stuff.
Mm.
And then bloody Chris Thomas off of the Mantic Universe podcast. Alessio. Oh, can I borrow you? Can I borrow you? Whips out, and I'm not joking, 4 copies of the Bolt Action rule book.
Just with him. Just carrying it with him.
Why would you have 4 copies of the Bolt Action rule book with you?
I know Chris will be listening to this. I love you, Chris. That is for some weird reason. So for some weird reason, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Why? Why Kings of War? Why would you not ask him to sign? I don't know the Kings of War. No. Oh, it's for my club mates back home.
The only thing that surprised me that surprises me is he didn't also like drop his pants and get him to sign his bum so he could get it tattooed over. You know.
Chris was really funny. So Alessio was there, and he said some really fascinating things. We were talking because one of the things he said was, I'm really happy to see this. And he points at the chess clocks that we had. I'm like, oh, yeah. And he's like, because that's why I designed Kings of War. He's like, I like chess, and I designed Kings of War to be chess. For wargaming. So I'm really glad we still have this. This is a tournament. I designed this. And then a big long conversation about like what Bolt Action is and how it's like a essentially beer and pretzels game. But Kings of War, he wanted to be a competitor. This is why he designed it as a competitive tournament game. I thought it was really interesting that the very design of the game encourages like chess clocks, no round stretching, no slow playing. That's kind of how he designed the game from the up, which is kind of like one interesting point of view. I never even thought of that before.
Yeah, which is interesting moving into fourth, right, is that around the argument of does that design hold it back from some level of popularity, even though chess is the most popular game in the world, right? But, you know, there's probably lots of variables to that, the fact that it can be played on a tiny little square and whatever and, you know, could be reasonably cheap. But it'll be interesting moving into fourth that, you know, because you don't want to lose those aspects completely, but you know, how do you keep that and potentially up the level of immersion? So I'm going to be fascinated with how he handles where the game's gone over the last years while he hasn't been involved, and then where he brings it back to.
I think so. It's like I can't remember who was saying it was. I can't remember who, whether it was on Countercharge I heard it or whether it was in at Clash, but someone was saying to him, so Alessio was involved with it, and he turned to them and said, you know, you've got two magic systems, right?
And he was like, yeah, I think that was on Countercharge. Yeah.
It was in Countercharge, wasn't it? Yeah. And for someone to take a fresh look at the game, you know, the level of bloat you've got in the game now, which is normal after like a full edition's worth, and say, right, let's reset like we did with the Big Red Book. I'm super excited for it. You know, I'm super excited for everything because that's my personality. But, you know, I think it's going to be, it's a really fun time. So we're going to have Clash of Kings this year, which is going to be potentially, you know, version 4 light or version 4 preview. We're going to see how it looks. There's going to be a lot of, you know, normal meltdowns about what it's like. And then we're going to have a brand new edition. You know, the game didn't die when the old world arrived.
Nah.
In fact, if anything, it's grown because there's people who were expecting the old world, didn't like it and moved to Kings. Or, you know, and there's been a huge, especially at Clash, we noticed there's a lot of War Machine players who've got totally disenchanted with War Machine. They see a really active community in Clash and they've moved over. That's really encouraging to see. So I think we're at a great point in the game, certainly in the UK. And I know it's not always the same everywhere in the world, but it's absolutely at its peak in the UK right now. And it's a really exciting time to be playing. Yeah, Clash is a symptom of that. You know, we sold out
100%. 100%. I think it should, you know, bear the, you know, the, I don't know, like I think it's 100% would bear some responsibility for the growth of the game because it is this highly visible, well-run, successful tournament, you know, where people can see 200 people, 150, 200 people having a great time playing a game with that doesn't lead to fisticuffs or the want for fisticuffs, you know?
We had no tears this time, which was a big relief.
Well, and it's funny, you say that with the Alessio and the magic system thing, because, you know, I think Rob was on record previously as he wasn't going to be, like when we first started hearing whispers about command dice, he's like, you know, that is just another, it felt like, you know, a third magic system or a second magic system. He's like, what? Like that feels like another thing of something we already do. But, you know, now seeing it and we can see probably what it'll start to look like, and it will replace some of that stuff. So it won't be, you know, that there's just all three magic systems or, you know, two different levels of aura that, you know, you got it, that people have to realize that this is for now and it'll come back to something that's much more streamlined, you know, particularly with someone like Alessio at the helm.
I think so, absolutely. There's two things. One is that I believe Rob is responsible for command dice in Kings of War. Because and I say that because you guys had the episode of what do you guys want to see in next edition, right? And it was like a definitive rundown of people's opinions. Let's face it, Countercharge listeners' opinions. And it was repeatedly command dice people talked about. And Rob went to this thing about, oh, yeah, because it's like Mantic's trademark is now command dice, and so they should put them into Kings of War, right? It was absolutely in that episode, and I believe that solidified the opinion that led to command dice being in this Clash of Kings, right? Mm. Don't underestimate the impact of highly visible podcast discussions, right?
Yeah. That could be true.
I think so. Yeah, I just, you know, it's really interesting, you know, you chat to people and you find out things about like what's coming up. And so we had we had some previews at Clash around, it's quite funny, we couldn't get Ronnie's presentation to work. So he just sat and wanged on for half an hour, which was very random and vague. And he very wondered. But, you know, new Basileian is first. So we finally get, you know, some new Basileian horsemen would be really welcome, because that's the template for all horsemen. And he has promised me that elves are next. So this kind of like refreshing the old ranges is definitely on the cards and completing those ranges. That's super exciting, I think.
They just pivot so quickly, I find. It's interesting how quickly they pivot with their ideas, which is, I guess it's good to be flexible. And so with the tournament, some of your decisions. So last year, I've never run it, but I, like at face value, I really like the idea of your bull shroud scoring system and things like that. Was there a reason that you pivoted to something else this year?
Yeah, we wanted to give. So I think blackjack's been in remission a lot. So I love. Mm. So I really like the prince. So okay, let's step back a bit. So we ran Northern Kings last year, and Northern Kings is generally quite accepted.
Oh, it was Northern Kings. You didn't do Bull Shroud.
No. We didn't. No, the Bull Shroud was at Masters a couple of years ago.
Right. Okay.
So Bull Shroud was my attempt to make a simpler version of what blackjack is, which is a scenario focused. Whereas the way that I think about it, so people come down to two camps. One is a win's a win. The win's a win camp, football fans. Yep. But I've won, so I've won, right? And then there's the people, but how much have you won by? Which is kind of where blackjack sits, right? So it's more like, okay, I've won five battles and I've lost one battle, but I got more objectives through those battles, so I've won the war. As opposed to you, you may have won six battles, but you won them so poorly that actually I've won the war. So in terms of like trying to recreate the idea of a campaign, a war campaign, for me, these scoring systems that reward how well you win, I think are better. And that was what Bull Shroud was when I created it. It didn't really work, and it was terrifically unpopular. Interestingly, in the Mid-Atlantic region, they've adopted it, and Bart Kohler adapted it. It's now called Bart Shroud, and that's the system they run. And I think that system, it just ups the amount that a win is worth a bit more. And it's essentially, it's like blackjack, but more positive in nature. So there's not the negatives you get in blackjack. But the whole reason I didn't like blackjack in the first place was it's very hard to work out. It involves maths, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not good at numbers, as I'm frequently talking about. You needed to write it on a sheet and work out the minuses and the plus and that. Companion does all that for you. All you enter is how many points did you get and how much did you kill? And then Companion calculates it for you. So I was like, well, let's just use Blackjack, which is a very, you know, popular, well-known system that's been around for ages, because Companion will calculate it for us. And so that's why we use Blackjack. I think it had benefits and disbenefits. The main disbenefit was that you used the royal we here. It wasn't me, but the new scenarios weren't entered correctly at the start of the tournament. So we just stockpiled for the first scenario and it wasn't in the companion correctly. So it didn't calculate how well you won. It just did a win, loss and kills or attrition.
Oh, okay.
Now, bless him, Elliot. I mean, he didn't sleep pretty much the whole weekend figuring it out. And I do feel for him. We fixed it by the end, but it meant that the first matchup you had on game two probably might not have been representative. But by the time we reached game six, it was representative. So, and we fixed it through the tournament. So that was a slight downside. But I like blackjack. I like the idea of it. I like the idea of, like, and we had two people that won all six games. One of them was poor George Kirk playing Basileans, who came ninth.
Ninth, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
But his wins were very, very, very small.
Yeah.
So in the way that I think about the game, which is how well did you win, he lost the war because he didn't win as well. So the people above him got more objectives, so they won the war, if you see what I mean. That's how it came out.
It is a significant drawback. You can find particularly a 20 or a 21 can jump you a lot in a really competitive game. Interestingly, the design ethos was kind of about, in the old 20-0, you saw people with a whole bunch of draws or things being able to basically podium. And so it was about creating that. But it was also meant to be about giving the person who was losing two avenues to try and claw back some points if they wanted, so that they felt like that they could. But it has ended up being something that can cause quite a bit of disparity, although in a big event, probably some separation, but it's arguably it's still not that good at creating, you know, spread of scores. Yeah, actually, you touched on it with the two people going 6-0. That's something that jumped out at me because in an event of 200, in theory, I'm just trying to do the math in my head, I think you would need 8 rounds potentially to guarantee one person winning, being the only person to win all their games, right? I was so stunned to see only 2 went 6-0. Which I don't know what does that. I wonder if that speaks to the quality of the players that they just keep knocking each other off, or I don't know what to read into that.
It was interesting. There was a very high at the top tables, very high standard. Like we had the top player from France, the top player from Poland. All the top players from the UK. Very 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 high standard of play. And I think it just we had very little separation. Where I expected to be like some people who were 21, actually what we had was a lot of people with similar scores. So at some point, I had some players complaining to me at game like 4 and 5. Why am I? I'm 50th. Why am I matched with the person that's 62nd? And the answer is because you're 1 point apart in tournament points. That's how close it is right now. And that's one of the facets you can get with blackjack because it's that positive negative scoring system, right? If you have a lot of close games, people just cluster. And he did sort itself out in the end. But you know, by game 5, Dan Wright was 8 points ahead. So he just needed to a small win.
To him is actually quite like because people go dwarves are really powerful, which they are, but they're also not often a wing big army. So credit to
them. Scenario armory. So the reason dwarves did well here is Dan's a good player. He had good matchups. He was lucky, and he's a good player. But also dwarves, and particularly his style of dwarves, which are robust, are great at scenario. They're great at holding
and not dying.
Right, yeah. which is blackjack. Important because it's about attrition. They're not a murder army. They don't need to be. They just need to not die as much as anyone else. So that kind of army, and I think a lot of people have got used to murder armies. And so your Varanger players and your Basileian players were almost disadvantaged by the meta that's been created by the pervasiveness of Northern Kings, which is, you know, has come to the point of just kill as much as you can. It'll be fine. And at the end workout scenario, no. The players that did well are ones that thought, right, from turn one, how am I going to win? And he talked about that in the countercharge episode, is that with his army, because it's slow, he needs to be thinking from turn one how he's going to win the scenario, which very rarely happens, I think.
Yeah, and which is 100%. Like, dwarves for a while have been my favorite army to play until they became super popular, because then I don't like playing armies that are turning up a lot.
Right.
But for that reason, I would build them defensively, right? Because it's about survival when you're that slow. Yeah. You want to survive instead.
But he's got a nice mix in his... So I think the player with the biggest balls, if you'll forgive me, was definitely Nico Felix. So Nico Felix is, well, Timothy Aubrey claims he's the second best French player. But on the evidence from this tournament, he's the best French player. I don't want to judge, guys. You can claim whatever you can. It's quite. I was talking to Timothy, and he was like, because he is the second best French player. And I was like, oh, who's the best player? And he went, it is me. And I'm like, well, you're 27th right now, buddy, so it doesn't seem like it.
That's such a French line, isn't it? It is me.
It is me. Anyway, but so Nico Felix was there, and he was playing Brother Mark. Yep. And he was on table 3 in the last game because that guy, and he drew with Tom Robinson, which is, let me tell you, that's difficult. And he's this super cool guy. He's like, he looks, if you'll forgive me, so French. Like, he is very fashionable. He's got very cool wavy hair and he's like super handsome. And he's just this really nice guy, but he's like a straight stone cold killer playing Brother Mark at the World Cricket Tournament. He's like 6th. In the final game, the guy is like incredible. So he wins the biggest balls award for me, absolutely.
That's a good segue onto the French, actually. There was a comment on Facebook, Steve, from I think a Frenchman about You know, something along the lines of, oh, he might have been the best player, but not the best hobby or something. I don't know if you saw that one. And a bit of a complaint about standard of hobby. And I made the comment, have you ever seen a 40K tournament, mate? You know, like, seriously. And I think the response was, well, yeah, I'm not talking about 40K. You know, I want the armies at Clash to be, you know, beautiful. And I thought, I couldn't figure out whether we're genuine or it was just a Frenchman complaining about the British, right? But
I didn't see it.
Oh, right. I can't remember. I think it might have been on the one with the pictures of the awards of Dan accepting his shield. And I don't know if it was posted by you or by the Masters Committee page or the Clash page, sorry. But and you have to keep pressing C translation because he keeps answering in French.
All right. That's interesting. So,
what did you find the standard of hobby was like overall and that Mantic representation that in previous years has been so good?
So the standard of hobby, and I'm saying this without a shadow of doubt, was ludicrously high. I mean, ludicrously high. It was the hardest to judge hobby-wise that it's just because there's so many apart from anything else. Previously, you know, because we have Chris Walsh's, right, in the UK, sometimes you just turn up and Daniel Reed's and people like that, you just turn up and go, yeah, they win, right? And Dan Reed was there. Dan Reed, sadly, he got poorly and he couldn't return on the second day. And his army was there and it's beautiful. It was, you know, absolutely beautiful army, but it by no means was the leader of the field. It was, wow. It was up there. It was absolutely up there. And if he'd been there the second day, it would probably have won something. But the fact of the matter is there was at least four or five armies there at that standard, at that super, super, super high standard. Glenn Waring's Dwarves, if you've spent any time off on that, you've been listening to Glenn Waring's Dwarves because it was like a dwarf a day for a while. I've only seen the pictures, but actually in the flesh, I came over to see his army. The detail, like the hand-painted detail on his shield is like extraordinary, miniature painting, extraordinary. And the guy that won Best Army is a guy called Russ Charles. He's actually a sculptor for Steamforge Games.
Oh, yes, and he did the Rawdon Gamzee.
The Rawdon Gamzee, right? So,
yeah.
And the army itself is just breathtakingly pretty. Mm. It's not just well sculpted and well modeled and well posed, but actually the quality of painting was just extraordinary. Just
how much do you want Russ to be in charge of Mantic design, just quietly? Design and sculpting.
He's done some work for Mantic in the past. And generally, he says it's weird when he goes to Kings of War events because he looks around and he's like, I did that. That's me. I did that.
Yeah.
And then Nick, so very amazingly, so Nick Williams here is a great, amazing guy, and he says, please don't talk about me on podcasts, and I apologize, Nick, but he, a lot of people don't know this, but he painted an army for Mark Cunningham to play.
We heard that in Australia, those whispers got back to us.
Yeah.
So I think it's worthy of a shout out. I know he doesn't like being talked on podcasts either, but
he's an outstanding human, and the army that he created for Mark, and maybe regretted making because it's so nice that he was like, I wish I had this myself. He'd taken an elf dracon, upsized it, reposed it into a dragon for his Rift Forge Orc army, and it was spectacular. It broke my heart to not give it best army, but then there was Glenn's army next to it. I'm like, wow, this is very hard. Just the most incredibly beautiful army. So much effort and love and work had gone into it. Just really, really spectacular.
Yeah.
And that was the three of them.
Mm. And for those that don't know, because, you know, Mark, his house burnt down essentially, didn't it? And he lost everything, including his gaming things. So, you know, to do that for someone, and there was a fundraiser going for a while. I don't know if it's still open, but...
It is.
Yeah. What platform was that on?
It was on GoFundMe.
I believe. You could search for it on Fanatics. It would come up. So I'm sure Mark enjoyed playing with that beautiful army.
He did, and he said it wasn't a bad army. So Tom Robinson wrote the list and he wrote it as a list that plays itself. List. It was like an Alpha Strike, a Riffle Draw army, lots of Health Strikers. Fantastic. So that was an amazing army. And then we had five judges awards that we gave to armies that we just loved. We might not be like hobby award winning, but that we like, I would take the army home. And there was five of those that won. And then we also, this year, we had outstanding hobby badges, whereby as we went around, we saw an armory, we thought, that's good. I think that's just a lot of effort's gone into that. We like it. And we noted those names down. We thought, we'll do 30 badges, and like each of the six judges can give 5 badges, right? And we thought that would be enough. Well, it wasn't. I had a list of like 50, 60 names of armies that I thought was just cool. And that's just the ones I saw. As I was giving them out, I saw armies that I'd missed. I'm like, oh, I missed that one. And it's really awkward. I made the horrific decision to go around during game 5 and give them to players just to say this. Can you imagine turning up at a table and you're like, hello, I don't know, John, we love your army. Here's a badge. And you turn to the other player at the table like, not you, and walk off.
You, not so much.
So awkward. We're not doing that again. We'll do it at the end. I didn't want to do it at the end because it's like 30 names, right?
Yeah, but, for sure. Anyway.
That was kind of funny, if awkward. So even though we had 38 hobby awards, it still wasn't enough. There was just still armies that we couldn't award. But, you know, the sound was very high. There was, you know, I'd say in excess of 70, 80% Mantic armies. People really, really go out above and beyond. Yeah.
Yeah, because and I noticed, I think in the pack you said, you know, we really want you to be, to have painted armies, but we won't turn any unpainted away. Did you really have any unpainted?
No, everyone was painted. Everyone was painted.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go back to the comment from the French guy about Dan's army. He said Dan doesn't paint generally. He does. He can. He just doesn't, because our friend Russell is like like so fast at painting. The man has no pile of shame. He's painted every miniature. Wow. At one point, he was so bored he painted my dwarf army for me just for something to do.
I thought you were going to say at one point. He painted your body.
No, he didn't do that. But I think he's just so quick and very high quality. He's like wins painting awards regularly. He's very fast. So he painted Dan's dwarves for him. But I think Dan might be threatening to paint some of his 90s like Skaven or something.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. His New Year's resolution last year was to paint his, like, do some hobby. And he hasn't done that. Mm. So we'll see. But then, anyway, in response to Mr. Frenchman, Vada Fair Food Club, we are very, very high hobby standard. That's a very rude word in French. I apologize.
Yeah. Well, see, I certainly didn't see any low standard on pictures. So we alluded to it about the growth of the scene, particularly in the UK. I mean, even if you take out those 61, you know, people who fly in, I'm assuming 61 doesn't include like Scotland and things like that, or Ireland,
non-UK, you know, right now.
No. So that's still, you know, 120, 130 from within the UK. And I've been on record a couple of times. I think there's, you know, other populous areas of the world, you know, where we're not seeing that growth. What do you think is different about the UK that's allowing it? Because, and it seems to be across the tournament scene. It seems like you are getting healthy tournaments regularly. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's a tournament pretty much every weekend in the UK you can go to. So part of it's geography, isn't it? So we're a small country. It's very travelable. Mantic is based here, so it's cheaper to buy the stuff. You don't have to get imports and stuff. So there's that. I think the scene has grown very healthy. So a number of key figures have really enabled to be very easy. So we have the Kings of War Masters site is extremely easy to find stuff, places to play. There's that. Our scene is much more casual. So I often look at the US scene, and I've, you know, been over to US tournaments and they are brilliant. I have a fantastic time. I think they're very competitive. So often if you turn up at a US tournament, you're going to get your face smashed, right? At Clash, like an out tournament, we have a lot of very casual players, very chill. Mm. There's a few high-end players. Actually, the more high-end players you have, I think it's harder for the scene to grow. Where you have more casual players, the scene grows more easily, I think, because everyone's at a standard. And I wonder if the scene's just got too high-end. And I had a really interesting discussion just this last week about withdraw. Right, so the whole thing about withdraw being optional, and UK doesn't have it and the US has it. Withdraw is a high-end play tactic, right? It's where clever people like a gotcha and they're like, ha-ha, I'm cleverer than you and I've smashed you in the flank and you didn't, you know. And part of the reason that we didn't use withdraw here is because I don't know if it's a politeness or a newer player thing, but it just it's something that feels divisive like that. In the UK, we're like, let's not. And so I think where you have these mechanisms in the game where you can get smashed and it feels unfair can restrict growth in ways, I feel, personally. Having said that, look at 40K, which is full of rules like that, and it's bloody everywhere.
So yeah. I think there's a good chance that is a big variable around that tournament play. I mean, as you said, everyone goes, oh, I went to tournament and I had a great time. But I think that is always going to be somewhat tarnished by the fact that you got your teeth kicked in, you know, and in somewhere like the US because it is so competitive. I do believe that there's a good chance that ultra competition holds back growth in some aspects of the game. And, you know, it's just opinions, right? But I also think that's in some areas of Australia, that's where it's held back growth as well, because you get a collection of players who are incredibly good gamers, you know, playing a game designed for tournament play. And even if they take a reasonably balanced list, they can still smoke someone who's not used to that. And that can make it hard to grow the game for sure. Yeah, because I think it just automatically feels slightly less fun for that person.
It depends on who you are, really, and what you're looking for. Like the War Machine players that I was talking to, they've come to Kings because it has a competitive scene. And War Machine made changes to the game. And War Machine was the most competitive. Like I've got a friend, Jilva, who plays War Machine a lot. And he said the first 20 games of War Machine he played, he got wrecked. And he came to King's War and he's like, bring your most tough list. I don't mind. I want to get crushed because that's what it's like in War Machine. And then he tabled me in his first game. But that's just because I'm not a very good player. I don't know what it is. I wish I knew, because I would love to transfer. You know, I am obsessed with this game, clearly. I don't play any other games. I would play it all, you know, all day. I play it every day of the week if I could. I wish I could. Sadly, I don't even get a game every week right now. I don't know what it is. It just seems to be in a very healthy place here in the UK. We have a lot of nerdy middle-aged men, maybe. We're compressed in a geography, so it's not as if you have to travel 2 hours to the next city to find a game. I have 3 clubs within an hour of me that are playing Kings of War regularly, and they feel too far away for me to go to because I live in the UK, right? It has to be within 20 minutes, otherwise I'm not bothering. And it happens there's 2 within 20 minutes, so it's cool.
I think clubs is an important thing. Clubs are an important thing, like, and that does seem to be, like, US is very store-based. Australia used to be very store-based, but, you know, as economies and inflation and everything's gone up, it's been harder to have stores. And so I think the club-based scene is something that works. Like, even if you don't have a store, do you have a collection of 20 people or 10 to 20 people coming together regularly to play games that still has some sort of visibility, you know, I think is can be important.
I think stores are vital. So, you know, my friend Rich has a store down a town about an hour and a half south of here called Gloucester, and they built a scene around a store there. And that store went through some ups and downs, and it closed for a bit. And then the scene grows and ebbs and flows based on that store. Because people walk in and are like, oh, what are you playing? And I've been in that store, and someone's walked in and said, what are you playing? We're playing Kings of War. Oh, do you mind if I watch? We're like, no, we're on the clock. No. And it's like, you know, that's why I'm super excited to have a store open in Birmingham. With my city, because we're the second biggest city in the UK, but we've only got GW stores in it. So the only clubs we have here play 40K or historical. That's all they play. And so we play Kings of War. Dan Wright, who won Clash, plays Kings of War at a 40K club with me, and there's only 3 of us there, because we tell everyone in that club and they're like, oh, blah, 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 oh, I've got Warhammer. And we're like, we'll give you a game. And they're like, I've got to finish my Space Wolves. And it's so frustrating. But it's like, I will give you a demo any day. It's not scary. And I think they're just like, feels a bit. And we're like the nerds of the gaming scene. We're like the niche of the niche, right? So a gaming store.
Do you think that's a sci-fi versus fantasy thing? Or do you think it's a Kings of War versus other games thing?
I think it's just a wedded to GW thing. So they'll play the old world. They don't like it very much, but they play it sometimes. And it takes them hours.
Yeah.
And they end up with these great big movement trays with 3 models on them. And you're like, guys, this doesn't look very good. I don't say that in my head. I'm thinking that doesn't look very good. Anyway, but I'll, you know, this store officially opens on the 28th this month, and the following Tuesday they're doing a late. And so I'm going to do some ambush demos. Let's see how it goes. People have said they're interested. I would, you know, it would warm the cockles of my heart to find. It's only because I'm lazy and I can't be bothered to actually, you know, run Clash and create a gaming scene for myself. But we'll run some demos, see how we go, see if people pick it up, and we'll go from there. I think a store is very, very important for growing your scene. You know, it's a place for people who are how curious, who walk in and go, oh, what's that? Sometimes come in. And you want to be careful not to bring your beautiful, elaborate, giant bases, right? Because we say that's the strength of the scene, and it is. But actually, for a hobby curious person, you're like, that's terrifying. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a couple of armies that are individually based Warhammer armies on movement trays, they're like, oh, I can play with that. It's a balance, isn't it? You need to make it seem friendly and opening and inviting and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. How confident are you in continued growth?
I don't know. I found it. I'm not an oracle. I found at the school, I found a third hall next to the second hall. It's an old gym. It doesn't need flooring. And I reckon I could fit another 20 tables in there. Although I said I could fit 70 odd tables in the main hall. And it turns out it was quite tight. Not good at measuring. Yeah. Not good at numbers and measuring. So I reckon we can go up. We can get bigger with Clash. We can possibly get to close to 250. So let's.
Yeah, well, I think you could also, like, 60 is an amazing amount to fly in, right? But you could still get, you know, if you do look at scenes like the French, who in the past have had 100-person tournaments, you know, not being that, you could conceivably have 20 people flying in just from France.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at this point, we're close to, we're basically ETC for Kings of War, right? So there's, or WTC, whatever it's called now, because ETC doesn't run Kings of War. It's not like a team per country, but we get big country teams. You know, we have the range of countries we had, you know, we had Swiss. I was the Swiss that drank my bloody rum.
Do you know what? When you were trying to figure it out, I was going to say, was it the Swedes?
Yeah. The Swiss. We had Swedish people. We had Norway contingent.
Yeah.
The Norwegians were awesome. Loads of Polish, loads of French, loads of Germans. Not Germans, Spanish, a couple of Germans. A guy from Ezekiel comes from Argentina. We had Walt Dirickson from Australia again.
He
said you gave him grief for playing his first games of Kings of War at my Clash of Kings and then his second games of Kings of War at yours. Well, guess what? His third games were at mine again. So he's due, buddy.
Yeah.
He still hasn't won a game.
He is due. Yeah.
He said he drew a game. Let's look him up. Love Walt. He's just a freaking legend.
He's a great guy. Yeah.
Let's see. Walt. How'd you do, Walt? Wow, he won a game.
Well done, Walt. I wonder if he did a recording about it after so it can be immortalized on MUP.
Probably. He came 174th, which is not last. So it's pretty good.
No.
Bless him. What a legend. So, yeah, we had people from all over the world, even people from Leeds. Can you imagine? So,
yeah, wow. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. How many limbs?
How many what?
Limbs. Did they
limb?
Have? Yeah. Six, seven?
People from Leeds? No, it's the number of toes that's different in Leeds.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I missed that there for a second. Normal for Norfolk. Huge international. What are we talking about? Forgotten. Oh, we can grow. So, yeah, so I think
I don't think we even managed to Spanish. A couple of Spanish, right?
A couple. Oh, they didn't do as well this year. Oh, we had a British 1-2-3. It infuriated everyone.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I know because you haven't had a British one yet, have you?
No, this year, first, right? So Dan's the first. Yeah. And Chris Lynch was third. And Florence, who started playing Kings of War 8 months ago, shot her way to victory. And I use the word, that's a pun, because it's Sylvankin. Yes. So she came looking second.
Because she had a loss, right? So she must have had a couple of big wins.
Yeah, oh yeah, she tabled Andy Ransom in turn four. Horrific. So Flo's got she has dice blindness where she'll be shooting you on fives and fives, and she'll do like 18 wounds off of 20 attacks, and she'll go, oh, it's just elite, it's average dice. And you're like, Flo, your dice are amazing. So poor old Andy Ransom had a bit of the it's not every game, but she had a bit of dice blinders against Ransom and shot him off, bless him. So she has some massive wins and she did incredibly well. We're really, really thrilled that she came second. She's not more thrilled than her. She can't believe it.
No, both her and Chris Lynch came in third, right? So, you know, both Chris on Lynch. Our Sylvan Kin podcast. So they, if you want to wonder about how wise these people are when you were listening, you can, well, now you got second and third in the biggest tournament in the world.
Well, they spent the entirety of the Sylvan Kin podcast complaining about how underpowered Sylvan Kin were and overcosted. So that's enough of that, right? Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Although Chris was playing, he was playing Northern Alliance, but he had a tough tournament. So he was one of the victims of the first game scoring. So he blamed him not winning because he was up against Dwarves in the second game, a very good Dwarf player. And he blames that on because he, well, Dwarves don't score well and blah, blah, blah. So I should never have played a Dwarf player. And I'm like, yeah, well, tough. So that's why he still did third. So he did pretty well. And he ended his last game was against Nico Felix, the top second best French player.
I need to look up Chris's Northern Alliance list, actually. I was just having a little bit of Facebook search. And, you know, how many times do you think, Steve, you've been asked the question on Facebook since everything about, do you have a link to the lists?
Yeah, there is. I'm halfway. So we can put them on the Masters site, but because of the way the Masters site is configured, it's a very lengthy process, and I'm about a third of the way through doing it.
Have you seen the guy that's already done an alphabetically sorted list?
Yeah, that's Arthur, right? Yeah. So he's a legend. He has done that, but I have seen it, but I'm just putting them into the Masters listing. I'll send you his list on Facebook, buddy. Here you go. That's Chris Lynch's list, but it's a very, very good list, as all Chris Lynch's.
And the other cool thing was someone brought a drone before and got to do a fly through. I'm assuming it was a drone for that.
No, he flew. He physically flew.
He physically flew. He was a winget.
he was just a tiny winget flying through the venue. So
I was just surprised that anyone called Richard did anything for promotion, you know, rather than dragging, like complaining on Facebook.
As he walked in, I offered him some free command dice and, he uttered some swear words. Yeah, no, so Richard, he turns up. He's amazing. So he's got drones and he comes with his son, Brendan, who was our youngest player, I think, second youngest player, no, youngest player, who plays he plays very good undead. He was in Masters last year. He's an extremely good player. Richard is better with drones than with Kings of War, I would say. But they, they do a drone fly through for us like they did last year. So pretty cool to have that, I think. The drone died at the wrong moment. And, nearly total somebody's army. Bounced off their back at the last minute when it was heading towards the table. So something to do with control range or something. Needs new motherboard. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, I imagine and probably walls interfering with range and things like that potentially.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Particularly when they're, you know, 1 meter thick sandstone walls.
Correct.
Yeah. I'm surprised the Wi-Fi works so well. They must have a million Wi-Fi extenders.
It worked sporadically, yeah. That's why I'm blaming my streaming issues on.
Were they streaming? There was a bit of camera. Was there camera quality, I think?
Yeah. So one of the other wishes I had from the last clash is that we improved our streaming quality. So John Fawkes and I have been working quite hard on trying to make it better. So we moved from like basic cameras to GoPros, and we had an HD camera as well. Still we didn't get the time to set it up properly, basically, because I was setting up the tournament instead. We had like an hour and a half to 2 hours to set up the whole tournament. So it still suffered. We had audio issues. I've got better microphones, so we can hear the players. That's good. That worked just about on the second day. But we had despite it was a GoPro 12. So I went to the guys from King's Retreat because their battle reports are always crystal clear. And I'm like, what do you use? And they said, we use a GoPro. It's just a GoPro 8 or something. So, John, we had a GoPro 6 and a GoPro 12. The GoPro 6 just died, and so I ended up using my normal web video camera for the end cam, which was fine. But the GoPro 12 should have been better. We just couldn't find a way to configure it properly, and that really frustrated me. Because I'm conscious, you know, it's not – for people at the tournament, it doesn't matter a whit. But if you're watching it, like I feel for Mike Ross, who does the first game every tournament, and I love him for it, but he's facing basically all the technical crap. I mean, John's not even drunk by that point, and yeah. It is still it's yeah, John's camera didn't work and the microphones didn't work properly from the commentary point of view. We couldn't get the cameras on. Blair, I was so frustrated. I can't tell you. I'm trying to run the tournament, but also trying to fix the IT problems.
Anyone that's never had to try and deal with streaming or setting it up, it is an incredible amount of work. Like it is, like it, you think it's like, oh, how hard is it to set up three cameras, point them at the thing, connect them to a computer with some microphones? I'll tell you now, it's like I'm happy to put the sword clanging. It's f***ing hard. Like it is just, you know, it is. It is an obscene amount of work. So, like, to even get it to the point that you did whilst trying to run a 200-person tournament, I think is incredible, to be honest. And, you know, if people complain, like, go chuck yourselves in the bin, guys, unless you're going to help out next year.
No one complained apart from me. I'm the only one that's complained. Yeah. I mean, and John Fawkes is a legend. So he does it for nothing. You know, he does it for, you know, and he buys most of the stuff himself and he gives up his whole weekend to come and chill with us and have a good time. So, I love John. Deeply, deeply appreciate him. We've been chatting to Adkins about his setup, and he runs physical cable. So we run it. So we have the setup in one hall connected to StreamYard, and then we connect to StreamYard ourselves, like we are commentating remotely in another hall, right? He has it physically wired in with mixing boards and HDMI converters and HD cameras and stuff, and We can invest in it, I guess. We invested in better microphones this time. That worked really well. I just feel like the technology that we have should work. It works for other people. I just can't.
I think some of it sometimes too is how rapid the autofocus and things on mics is, right? Because you've always got hands coming in and out, models moving. It's got to decide what it's going to pick up on from a detail point of view. I think it's quite, you know, gaming is quite a hard thing to film in that static type of setup. Correct. Like I think the battle reports where they've maybe got a stick and they can kind of zoom in, which is much more editing heavy in the post, right? But, you know, I think that's easier to get a quality out of than these static setups sometimes.
I agree. And I think there is a way to fix the focus on your camera that I haven't yet worked out. Which fixes that, right? So fixing your focus, your focal length is absolutely, autofocus is a demon because it'll autofocus on your head as you lean over. And as you lean over, it doesn't focus back on the table because it's looking for a head because that's what it's designed to photograph. So I think GoPros have a way of fixing focal length. Didn't have the time to work it out. So that's very frustrating. So I apologize if people found it blurry, but hopefully we've painted a picture with words. You know, there's been huge numbers of views on it. So that's really great. People are 100%.
Watching. I mean, yeah, the little bit of time I got to log in at the time, you know, compared to other streams of things, the numbers are huge. You know, I think like, you know, if you compare it to the American Masters streams, there are a lot more views, you know? So I think that some of that is, you don't have that whole bunch of really competitive players in America who are probably tuning in to watch. And
the American UK, players.
Yeah. And because UK is that little bit more casual, they maybe don't watch as many streams of American games. I don't know. But
I watch US Masters. That coverage was actually, Mike Atkins is a legend. That coverage
was amazing.
It was so good.
But Steve, why is everyone so obsessed by stats and things? Why is everyone so obsessed by stats, Steve?
People love
data and dice. Why are we so obsessed by data and dice?
I love to, the guy that runs data and dice reached out to me to say, you know, can I do this? And I was like, yeah, crack on.
Yeah.
And I love his analysis. I think a lot of his texts might be written by ChatGPT because he travels a lot. He kind of talks to ChatGPT and asks it to write for him, which is fine. I think some of the conclusions, one of my favorite things about his website, because he's all about like analyzing the list and he's written a parser to analyze the lists. He said, I've done all this work, I've done loads of analysis, thousands of analysis, and my conclusion is it's far more important how good the player is. That's so awesome because it says about how balanced our game is. That actually, you know, one of the lists he picked out as the strongest list in Clash of Kings based on stats alone. was David Hetherington's list. Bless David, who came 178th with his dwarfs, right? Yeah. Adam. So there is something to say. I mean, I'm not saying that David's a terrible player, but there is something about lies, and damn statistics, right? That the strength of Kings of War is it's how you play. It's chess, right? Everyone's got the same kind of pieces, and it's how you play, and that's how it was designed. Seems to be how it's shaken out. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll be catching up with the Data and Dice guy for an episode soon. So,
So cool. Well, say hi.
Yeah. He's a great guy. Yeah. Trevor. I thought, I thought I'd throw in the amusing comment I saw on Facebook about it. Yeah. Anything else you want to tell us about likes, dislikes, thank yous, things you want to do for next time, or shout outs for stuff coming up, Steve?
It's just for me, it's a huge thank you to everyone. So there was, you know, Kings of War is a very community focused game. It's different from other games in that respect. We had a huge support from the community. We set up, you know, the biggest tournament ever run in an hour and a half, and half an hour of that was me trying to sort the streaming rig out. So it's just massive thank you to everyone that helped us set up. Without thinking, we asked all of the players if they would mind helping us clear up, just like break your tables down and put them in place. And some people were like, what? We don't do that. And we're like, well, you know, we didn't think, because we're used to Kings of War and it's just a community, right? We just help each other out and that's how it is. So thank you to everyone that helped sort out. We had people that stayed behind for an hour to help us break everything down and lifted an insane amount of tables to put them in the right place. Thank you to our sponsor. We were sponsored by Army Painter, so everyone got some Army Painter paints, which is amazing. And we're sponsored by Rosemary & Co., who sponsored our hobby awards. We were sponsored by War Chest Creations, who is a US-based printing and template maker. So everyone got a War Chest Creations Hill Helper stairs, which I had to glue together. I didn't realize they came in 15 bloody pieces. Anyway, I did that 200 times. You soon learn a bit about yourself. But no, amazing to give us that for free. Really, really appreciate it. And Mantic, who gave us so much free stuff.
Good news is you can never be identified for crimes now, Steve, because you've got finger pads left.
It was really cool. Yeah, so there's a huge number of thank yous. And yeah, the school was awesome. So we're really great. So I'm really, really hugely grateful to everyone. The committee they give up their time, they spend their money for nothing. We don't do it. You know, there's no reward for us apart from the odd freebie, right? So that's a huge thing to give up for the community. So I'm really grateful to them. In terms of next year, what we're planning to do, so we have the potential to go bigger. People still buy tickets. We still haven't decided when they go on sale. Last year, they went on sale 1st November. It depends if I can organize things by then, because I don't want to go on sale and not have, not know what you're buying, let's say. So whether we do it in the new year, because now we're confident that we will sell, or whether we do it in November, I don't know. We'll let people know as soon as possible. I mean, it'll be in the same venue. It's very likely to be the 13th and 14th of September. Matt Croger will be there, coming over from Australia to join us. He's bringing his family. His family's going to stay with me in my house, and my wife will look after him. It's going to be great.
I've been thinking about Europe next year, except the girls, I just don't want to. I don't want to put up with the travel with them, to be honest, but I've got a brother who lives in Vienna. So, you know, we have to do Europe at some point.
Exactly. How old are they?
5 and 2.5.
Ah, easy. No problem. Yeah. That's the best age to come over. My 8-year-old loves babies. He'll look after them. He'll play with them all day. Don't worry about it. Loads of toys.
Great. Perfect.
Yeah. 13th, 14th September. I heard Rob Phaneuf's coming as well. He can't resist. Jeremy Duvall didn't come this year, despite promising, the liar. Yeah, but I heard he was.
Well, he's got himself a sugar partner now, so you never know.
Right.
You know, he might make it the next one. Doctor, So you never know. He told me that the thing holding back from the Australian trip is that there's no Disneyland. So or something like it. Because of her kids, you know, they need something to go to.
Yeah,
you know, he gets his thing, they'll get theirs, but you know, we'll see. You know, got to do the tour at some point.
Drop them off at Warhammer World. It's just around the corner. They'd love that.
Yeah.
Bugman for lunch.
Yeah.
Maybe not. So anyway, so 13th, 14th next year, probably 90% likely. I know, it's just more of the same, really. We're already working on ideas. Everyone's excited. We can't resist. Let's have a week off. Nuh-uh, not happening. We're straight into planning for next year, which is pretty nuts.
Well, as soon as Clash comes out, I'm going to need you to help me lean on. We'll get the scoring done for things like Blackjack, but we need you to help us lean on Elliot to get them actually into the companion as quickly as possible. If there are or are not new scenarios, I should say, in Clash of Kings.
I've heard one of the new scenarios is brilliantly written by an absolute genius of a man. I've heard one of the progressions.
I've heard that as well.
Yeah.
All right, Steve. Well, I want to thank you for your time, mate. So close to Clash being over after I'm sure it's stolen so much time from you and your family, that I appreciate you coming on for a bit of a debrief. I think keep your eyes peeled to Fanatics, guys, for when the tickets for next year go on sale, whether that's November or early in 2025. But look forward to rolling a lot of command dice at
Command
of Kings
dice
25.
In everyone's goodie bag. I tried to get Ronnie to give us command dice for everyone's goodie bag this time. And then I was like, come on, it will really annoy everyone. And he was like, that's a really good reason. And he was like, but it's £8 per set of command dice where it is here, wherever it is in Australia. He's like, no, I want the money.
Exactly. But now that plays into the whole conspiracy theory that the command dice are just about profit, Steve. They're going to make so much money off dice.
Yeah, so much. I very much doubt it.
There must be a whole warehouse of dice that they're trying to sell.
I played a game after day one of Clash against George Kirk. I actually 3D printed an enormous trophy just because I said, do you want a game after Clash? Otherwise, you won't get a game. I'm like, yeah, cool. We should have a trophy. And then we went through this whole thing, and eventually I printed, like, literally the Chalice of Fire from Harry Potter is enormous. It was like a 3-foot cup in gold, and put a plaque on it. It's called the Kirk Hildrew Cup because that's our name. Long story short, he won. And then he sent me a video of him naked in bed with the cup. I'm not quite sure why. But we played with command dice. Neither of us knew what command dice did. But obviously people were like crowding around our table. We're like, don't forget to roll your command dice. And we rolled every single turn. Just mess with people's heads.
Oh, that is fantastic. Yeah.
Shout out to George. George, 6 wins. In fact, he had 7 wins because he beat me on Saturday night. So he should have won the whole tournament, really.
Yeah. Wow. Nice. Well, is it that hard to beat you, mate?
It's not
hard to beat me. Yeah.
I'm playing Kings, especially playing Kings of Men. Let me tell you, it's not hard to beat me at all. Just turn up. It's all good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, mate. I look forward to seeing. There's been plenty of questions about pictures, but Mantic are deciding. I think I saw you reply to a comment. Mantic are deciding best way to release, the more professional photos of armies and things like that.
Yeah, I think they're going to go up on the Clash of Kings website, which is clashofkings.uk. So they'll probably go up on there at some point. We've got a bunch of pictures there now. If you want to see the tournament, there's a ton of pictures on there. You click on the photos section. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Thanks, mate. And I hope you guys enjoyed that debrief with Steve. And until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.